coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. Big thanks to Nielsen in Tampa, Florida. That's where I'm doing the show from this week. And our guests, Jeff Wilson and Jeff Welton. Two Jeffs on one great show. They both work at Nautel. And we're going to be talking about making sure you have good relationships with the people that you might need in times of emergency. Reps from your manufacturers and your vendors. Plus, a few ideas on best practices around the transmitter sites. Coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone, like this one, the light bulb at the top of the tower. Don't have one of those handy today. Hi, I'm Kirk Harnack. Not in the usual Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. No. I'm in Tampa, Florida. Got invited to come down here and speak for the technology symposium that SBE Chapter 39 put on today. What a success. 60 people here, and that's to be expected. SBE Chapter 39, thanks to the efforts in large part of Isaiah Chavez, who's been a guest on our show before. They are quite a growing chapter and quite a bunch of fantastic engineers from all around Florida, mostly the Tampa area, but people did come from miles away to be here too. So technology symposium today, and speakers from a number of different companies and professions. So glad to be here, glad to participate, and going home tonight. So we'll be back in our usual studio next week. Okay. Hey, welcome in. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Thanks a lot to my employer, Telos Alliance, for giving me about an hour and a half off on Thursdays to get this done. And we've got a show for you today. I don't know what kind of pandemonium awaits us. I do know that one of the chief, you know, contributors to the pandemonium, Chris Tarr, is not here. Chris has been on a couple of big projects, and we might hear a little bit about that via Jeff Welton. But the chaos today is going to be courtesy of a couple of Jeffs, Jeff Welton and Jeff Wilson. So let's bring them in here. If we got a three shot, that might be cool. Jeff Welton, Jeff Wilson, welcome in. Glad you're here on This Week in Radio Tech.
Thanks, Kirk. Glad to be back. And anytime you got dueling Jeffs, it's guaranteed to be, I don't know, pandemonium's the right word, but there should be some shenanigans.
I was just going to say, happy to be here, Kirk, and I'm pretty sure anytime Mr. Welton and I get together, there is pandemonium.
So now, I've got to add side note before you get going, Kirk. We're doing our in-house sales training. So Wilson's out of his natural element too, because he's actually sitting in my bedroom upstairs. So our mics aren't dueling. And I just realized as Suncell put the zoomed in on Jeff there that I didn't realize I had my bedroom painted Nautel blue until right now. Don't tell my wife.
Now, I realize it's a banner that's behind Jeff Wilson, but at first...
the walls and the ceiling are not.
Yeah, but for a second, I thought that the Nautel transmitter just above his head was maybe a window air conditioner that just happened to be in the shape of a VS 2.5 or something.
You do what you got to do some days. Air conditioning, we're in Canada. We don't need air conditioning.
In fact, the transmitter...
close the door.
A transmitter there to warm the room up might actually be in order on most chilly evenings. So, yes, ladies and gentlemen, our guests are Jeff Welton and Jeff Wilson. I'm not sure how we're going to exactly tell them apart. We're going to call you Welton and Wilson. What are you guys doing in a sales meeting? How do they call you?
Jeff, I'm Big Jeff.
That's pretty it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's younger.
Although I'm pretty Big Jeff right now, too. I need to get back on the treadmill.
Don't we all?
Summer on the road, buddy.
Yeah, yeah, it'll do it to you. Well, hey, welcome in, everybody. I'm delighted that you've joined us. We got a number of topics to talk about today. We've tentatively named the episode. We may change it, but tentatively name the episode Easy Peasy, because there's a lot of topics that one of the things that I think all of us like about Jeff Welton is his ability to describe a situation that sometimes may be sticky, difficult, awkward, and make it seem simple. And so Jeff's going to pass along a lot of advice to us today about not only technical advice dealing with transmitters, but personal advice dealing with people, dealing with maybe your factory rep for whatever product you're dealing with, whether it's a transmitter or maybe an audio processor or maybe an audio console or, you know, just maybe an accessory for the station van. I don't know. A lot of advice applies to different disciplines and situations. And Jeff Wilson is here, too, to add his special brand of advice to the whole thing as well. We will have practical advice and good personal advice. And Jeff Wilson and Jeff Welton are the perfect people to do it. So I'm looking forward to today's episode. But gentlemen, before we get started too much into this, we have a little announcement to make from Nautel. And Jeff, I understand today you've been doing some training on something called the GV2. What's that all about?
Yeah. So GV2 is the evolution of our GV series. The first iteration will allow us to virtualize the HD multicast, the HD generation, as well as add processing. And see, historically, the issue we've had with time alignment is that we split it, we send it across two separate paths, whether your gear is located all at the site or some's at the studio and some's at the site. And then we put it back together and broadcast it. And unless you've got a lot of lockstep and synchronization, then your time alignment can wander a little bit. And so, I mean, the folks at Innovonics came out with the Justin 808, which is a great way of doing that. But what we've done with this, if we do the split and the join in one box, we control the entire path 100%. And so we eliminate the need for time alignment correction. So rather than solving the symptom, we've just totally eliminated the problem. And we're really kind of excited about that. Now, there's some other aspects of it going forward that we learned about today that I'm not allowed to talk about. But suffice it to say that HD is the first big need for it, but there are other cool applications coming. So it's just tip of the iceberg, if you will.
So I see that right...
And if I could jump in real quick, and say one of the other big things that's very exciting about it is with the GV2, besides being able to put that E2X in there, we can actually take, and we're partnered with Telos, and we can actually put the Omnia processing in there, and I'm sure we'll probably get into that a little bit more later.
Cool. That's awesome. Thank you very much. And you guys know I just did an HD project myself with Nautel gear and was amazed at how relatively easy it was at this point, since you guys have put the importer and exporter together in the Multicast Plus box. We just bought a new exciter and we modified an old Nautel transmitter and we're on the air. It's pretty cool. But hey, thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Of course, you can find out more at Nautel.com. And if you want to know more about the GV series of transmitters and the new GV2 that has their new AUI, Advanced User Interface, built into it, where you can you don't have to use Flash or anything like that. You can just use an HTML5 browser, and it all looks great. So thanks a lot, Nautel.
Yeah, and a little plug for the GV. So the AUI, folks are like, how far away is it? You know, it's been forever, and no lie, I mean, we haven't hit a single date yet. But I was actually able to run a training course on the GV AUI for our sales session today on a live transmitter. So a whole lot closer than I was not too many months ago.
Okay, awesome. Well, we'll all be excited to get that. Will that new AUI be able to go in older transmitters as well?
It will. It's going to be an evolution because the GV, for example, and the NX High Power, to name two, and the original Envy use single board computers with either hard drives or compact flash cards for memory storage. The VS, the NV Lights, and the low power NX use ARM processors and, of course, different iterations depending on the age of the equipment. So there's a lot of hoops to jump through. This is why we put a lot of focus on VS, discovered challenge after challenge after challenge, missed deadline after deadline after deadline. It's really, really close on that one as well, although I suspect there's a few things coming, because in the initial, we looked at it, and a lot of things that made the AUI kind of awesome were dropped in the process of trying to make it non-Flash. Because even now, there's a lot of things you can do in Flash that require a lot more computing power to do in HTML. So it's just been a really interesting progression, and not a little frustrating, let's put it bluntly.
Hey, so, a lot of companies, including Telos, found out a few years ago that, hey, Flash is amazing. It's wonderful. It's graphically gorgeous. It does cool things. It's vulnerable. But all the cool things
and
it does.
And it's gone.
now it's gone. That's right. Yeah. So,
cool little side note. So anybody running the Flash app now, of course, knows about the AUI Access app that we've got that will allow you to get onto it. Where it is cool, if you've got like an old first generation BrickLink that you can't update that requires Flash, you can access that through our app. Some of the old Grass Valley switchers required Flash, and you can access those through the app. So it's really cool for anything you've got that does require Flash that you thought you were going to have to throw in the dustbin. Now maybe you can breathe new life into it. So.
And I don't know if your app will access an Omnia 11, but the Flash app for Omnia 11 is extraordinarily similar, like maybe the same code base as your Flash.
It's basically Adobe Air in the background embedded so that you get around the need to use Flash in the browser.
Yeah, that's it. Flash by itself is okay. Flash in the browser, they discovered lots of holes and couldn't fix it. So
yeah, well, and it's like the whole thing with Java and JavaScript, so same concept.
Yeah. I get those things so confused, but we're not here to talk about that. One thing we want to talk about is what I would call best practices. A lot of us engineers, we know the right way to do something, but maybe we've been doing it at a transfer. We've been letting something slide for so long that we don't notice it anymore. I'll tell you one thing that'll, for example, get you to think about all the things around your house that you've been putting up with not working right, or, well, if I jiggle this door just right, it opens. Or, yeah, I know that bathroom door squeaks really bad, but hey, that tells me somebody's going in the bathroom. There's things all around your house that may not be working right. What to bring all that up is put your house for sale, because then your real estate agent will come through there and he or she will discover and remind you, hey, Kirk, this and this and this and this and this is wrong, and you might want to clean those windows and that gutter's falling down and there's a hole in your soffit just on the west side of the house there. All these things that you got used to. And we as engineers, it's just human, it's natural. We let these things happen at transmitter sites. And maybe we ought to think about, hey, company's coming, let's clean this up. Or I'm going to get inspected by maybe my corporate director of engineering. Do I really want to spend an hour discussing excuses or why things aren't right? Why not just get them? Why not just fix them? So I think it's cheaper and of course better to look for these little things, get them corrected. And because it doesn't have to be expensive typically to do best practices. And that's the kind of where I'd like to talk for a few minutes about this now.
I'll give you a couple examples of that, just totally not really related to broadcast, but in the same vein. So, of course, as you know, Wilson's here, which is cool because we love him, but Real Boss is a little less than enthused about the state of the counter that I tend to pile stuff on when she knows somebody's coming. So about 2 weeks ago, she's like, get all your crap off that counter. I may paraphrase exactly what she said just a little for broadcast, but you get the point. And so I got all the crap off the counter. It took me about 3 hours or so. There was a lot of stuff piled up there. And of course, you've got to sort it and put it away and sort it, put it away. Well, I've had 2 weeks since then, and there's been one or two things go on that counter. But at least once a day, I make it a point to go through there and grab the stuff on the counter and put it away. And it takes a couple of minutes each day as opposed to 3 hours at once. And I guess the issue we run into, and I see it a lot with things like grounding and groundskeeping, are the two. Both, maybe it's the word ground, I don't know. But I've run into a lot of sites. I almost ran into one, couldn't quite run into it because the door was blocked by a 4-inch tree that had grown up. Now, I don't know how fast trees go in Tennessee, but they don't get to 4 inches overnight.
No. Oh, my gosh.
So you know, so that kind of thing. I mean, it is one of those. And as we move, I say move, I mean, I've got a lot of friends who are contract engineers and a lot who are staff engineers. And you almost need a schedule of site visits. And you really need to vary it depending on the time of year. Because like summertime, you're going to be cleaning air filters in Cottonwood areas a lot more than you're going to be necessarily cleaning them in the wintertime, for example.
I can think of a very typical example that runs along these lines. One of my transmitter sites, and I don't do the grounds maintenance there. We have somebody doing that. But when we bought the station, you drive in, and one of the guy anchor points was pretty close to the driveway. And so it was cleaned up because you saw it every time. One of the guy anchor points was on the edge of the woods. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't quite as clean. And one of the guy anchor points, nobody had been there for 25 years. I don't think.
So it was pretty much back in the woods.
Yeah, way in the woods. And certainly the previous owner had never been there. Just on a due diligence, looking at buying the station, you know, we had to go there. It was as bad as you might imagine for a place that had not been visited right. in 25 years. So go ahead.
So another prime example is electrical panels. A lot of times, you know, you'll take a panel off to replace a breaker or to swap out a breaker to put in a new piece of gear, and then the panel gets leaned up against the wall, and 5 years later, it's still leaned up against the wall. And I mean, besides the obvious safety issue of that, it's just not necessarily good practice. So, you know, to take the 30 seconds to bolt it back together after. And this is something I struggle with. I've got a workshop right to my left in my basement here. And I guarantee you walk down there, you won't find all the tools where all the tools should be by a long shot. So it's something that we all struggle with, I'm sure.
You know, and Jeff Wilson, Jeff Welton, you may both feel the same way. Back when I was a full-time contract engineer, before I started working for Telus Alliance, I really, many, many days, I considered myself just a high-paid janitor, because my job to go do maintenance at a site, I would go clean stuff. And in the course of cleaning stuff, I would find things that were wrong, and I would find things to fix, and I would fix things, a lot of it just by cleaning it, exposing, oh, here's a thing that's wrong. And by cleaning, I'm not just talking about Formula 409 and Clorox and that kind of thing. I'm just talking about just getting things organized, and the problems would kind of either appear or they would disappear depending on the problem. But it gave me plenty to do, and I knew when I left that site, it was better. It may not have been perfect, but it was better than when I came there. So just being aware and alert and cleaning is a darn good thing to do.
And a perfect corollary, and I'm going to throw this right over at Jeff Wilson, because I know he owns a boat, and I know he spends a lot of time in that boat on the Mississippi, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't just drag it out of storage in the spring and then throw it in the water. Maybe I'm wrong, but Jeff, I mean, there's a process, right?
There definitely is. We have to get it going in the spring. It's one of the things we just did a couple of weeks ago is winterize it for the winter. And there's a checklist of everything that has to be done. You change the oil, you get the water out of it, you put the antifreeze in, and then that checklist is reversed in the spring. So it's got to be the same for your transmitters and your transmitter site. So. Keeping a good list, checklist, even by season, like you said, is a really good proactive idea.
Yeah, and that's actually, checklist was an ideal example. I mean, you can have a checklist for the site as a whole or for different tasks within it. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that. There is a book, Kirk, and I mentioned this not too long ago in a webinar I did. I forget where. Might have been Barry, Michigan's, don't know, but it was the Checklist Manifesto. And it's a really good resource on giving you ideas on how to do that.
I'm writing that down.
I threw this at you cold, so now you're going to be frantically looking up to find it. But yeah.
Well, not quite, but I'll look it up later and put it in the show notes. I sure will. Something else that there are some things that maybe we excuse and let go, and they really will come back to bite us. And well, like changing the oil and the motor on your boat, obviously, is one thing. Another is, I've been to transmitter sites where let's say there's two air conditioners two air conditioners there, and one of them's working and one of them has failed. Well, you know, the one that's working is going to fail too. and then you got no air conditioning, and then you're going to have to leave the door propped open and all the attendant problems that has until you get something working. So in Mississippi, we recently had a transmitter site just like that. Actually had three air conditioners in the building. kind of a shared site. I think maybe we're responsible for one of them. But anyway, lack of maintenance caused plenty of problems. And this is what other people are more responsible for it than we're supposed to be. It's a rented site. But the point is, if something's not working, man, you got to, especially like air conditioning, that's going to bite you bad on a hot day when the place gets warm.
Right. And I mean, of course, the good one will never fail on a cold day. It will always fail on the worst possible time. And I mean, another example, and a friend of both ours, mutual engineering friend, and I visited a site not too terribly far to your east a few months back. And they'd been having a lot of trouble with amplifier failures. And we got digging around and discovered that the tower had a wire clamp going to the base of the tower, going to a ground rod. The transmitter had a wire coming off it, going out the side of the wall, going to a ground rod. The AC panel had a wire coming down and going outside, going to a ground rod. None of them were connected as far as we could tell. So your ground potential was there. There was no common ground, and you know, add together no surge protector, and things kind of became self-explanatory. So it's like, you know, I gave him a few ideas. I said, well, we could do this and this and this, and you know, the biggest expense would be the surge protector, which you really need regardless. But yeah, I mean, sometimes some of the biggest changes I've made have just been relocating a couple of ground wires, not really adding any significant expense for, you know, it wasn't a huge cost. I mean, I had one in Missouri where we went from several power supply failures, a storm, to one in 14 or 15 years just by rerouting the grounds.
You make a great point, and there's a great resource for this. Not every engineer knows about this. Nautel has either a book or an addendum, a pamphlet on grounding a transmitter site. And I what I recall reading from it, Jeff, and you can refresh my memory, is that this book tells you the theory of why you need to do it this way and this way. It tells you how to do it right, but it also tells you how to mitigate an existing bad situation.
Right.
Tell me about that pamphlet.
And what you're thinking of, it's called Grounding for Grounding and Lightning Protection for Radio Transmitter Stations. It was first written by one of our founders in, I want to say the 80s, when we started doing broadcast. And we've evolved it a little and made it a little cleaner and more modern looking, but the underlying principles haven't changed. And if you want to get to it, nautel.com, up top, click the resources tab, look for white papers, scroll all the way to the bottom, and it's like the second one from the bottom, I think.
Well, but, I'll put a direct link to it in the show notes, okay?
Yeah. And I mean, it is a great resource. The other one, not to pull away from Nautel, but the other great resource, if you Google the Motorola R56 standard, pretty much it's the Bible for cell company grounding. That's how all the cell, what they use for a reference. And it talks more about halo grounds. I'm a little more neutral. Number one, they're more work to install if you don't already have one. And they're real easy to screw up if you're not really intimately familiar with the system. So, you know, but single point grounding is a very minimum will save you a significant amount of dollar. Now, having said that, the single point grounding also requires a path between AC and ground. And the only way you get that, except through power supplies, is with a surge protector. So you need the grounding, but you also need a good surge protector. Oh, and ferrites. Got to have ferrites.
We're talking to Jeff Wilson and Jeff Welton, both in Nautel, and we're talking about ways, things that you need to think about, and an attitude that we all should have about transmitter sites and other things that we do in engineering. I'm calling it easy peasy because, you know, it's kind of our jobs to do these things and not let things get out of hand. And Jeff's going to have more specific ideas, both Jeff Wilson and Jeff Welton. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by my friends at Angry Audio. My friend there is Mike Dosh, Catfish. And Catfish has designed a lot of things in his life, a lot of really cool electronics. And the latest thing he's designed, and this is a surprise for Suncast, I'm going to talk about the Rave audio console. This thing is so cool, so awesome. It's fairly small. It's not exactly diminutive. It's a small audio console that's all analog. Hey, yes, I'm here cheering on an analog audio console. He says, we didn't cut any corners. We just rounded a few. It's beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous analog audio console. Of course, largely it uses the RJ45 connectors, the Studio Hub standard wiring scheme to get audio in and out. But there's also some XLR connectors on there for things like microphones in and out. It's got several buses, on-air indicator lights on the console itself and external, two stereo output mix buses, program and audition. Plus, there's a monitor selector with talkback to guests, built-in high-power headphone amp, a very flexible monitoring section for the board operator, and it's got mic inputs, it's got line-level inputs, does not have any digital inputs or outputs. That's not what this board is for, but it is so pretty and so cool, and I just love this thing. Catfish has given me some sneak peeks at this console over the last few months, and he is these things are starting to go out the door. The mic preamps, by the way, these are absolutely studio grade. These are just fantastic low noise mic preamps. It does have 48 volt phantom power available in it, and internal power supply is in there, just like just about everything that Angry Audio makes. Power supply is built in, heavy duty. It's just really well built. By the way, this little sucker is heavy. It's not going to slide off your audio your tabletop. It is a good looking and well built machine. Check it out, angryaudio.com. The console is called the Rave, R-A-V-E, the Rave console from Angry Audio. You can buy it from broadcast dealers, any broadcast dealer that sells Angry Audio equipment. And then, of course, there's a whole line of accessories to go with it, like mic processors that are a really cool idea. There's the whole C-level processing range. There's a good-looking and less expensive on-air tally light systems that they have, tower lights. So not for your tower, but a tower of lights. AngryAudio.com. Thanks a lot, Catfish and Angry Audio, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Now, the other sponsor I want to tell you about is Max Connect. And, you know, we've talked about Max Connect Wireless quite a bit. I want to talk for a moment about the services that they're now offering. And we might take a look at the main webpage there at maxconnect.com. So many engineers, and I've just met with a bunch more of them today here in Tampa. So many engineers are truly overworked. They have so many fires to put out. And I just really spoke with several different big corporate engineers here from the Tampa area. And they know they have projects to do. But, you know, when they have an off-air problem or something that's going to take them off the air unless they do something about it soon, they got to do it. Well, Max Connect is not only a contract engineering service, they're a project service. Yes, they do repairs. We've talked to Josh Bone on this show about their repair, so you can ship them equipment to be repaired. Call them first, of course. But if you need projects done, like a remote control system put in, or a new transmitter put in, or maybe maybe the antenna or the coax needs to be changed out, or you need a new STL system, or you needed some new ideas for STL, whether it's IP based or RF based, or maybe an IP radio, where you kind of got both. Max Connect is full of great ideas and quality workmanship. They cover all the U.S. really. The Eastern U.S. is easier for them right now. They do have some people out west, but they can be really your friends in this business. If you're an engineer and you're just overwhelmed with work and you can't quite get done the things you need to, Max Connect will make you look good. All right. They are your partner in broadcast projects. So check it out. Max Connect, MaxConnect.com. We'll have the website on the show notes. And of course they do have the Max Connect wireless. All right, we're talking to Jeff Wilson and Jeff Welton, the Jeff brothers, here at This Week in Radio Tech. Jeff, I want to make sure we cover this idea of relationships. It was important to you that we talk about relationship with your factory rep. What do you mean by that?
And I'm going to defer that to Wilson too, because I talk tech, he talks people. but it is really, when you get right down to it, I mean, the people buy stuff, work best with people they like. And you know, we live in a world of relationships.
Yeah, we do. And I just try to make it easy for the folks in my territory, the folks I talk to are that maybe aren't even in my territory, to call at any time if you've got questions on Nautel products. As I tell everybody, I don't know all the answers. Heck, I don't even know half the answers, but I know some really smart people have their number and can get those answers and help solve the problems. My compatriot there with the same initials as me, JW, he's the one that gave me the mantra: is if you keep it clean, you keep it cool, and you keep it well grounded, your transmitter is going to last a long, long time. And I can't tell you how many people I pass that along to, and it's true, right, Jeff?
And the funny thing about it is, I got that from Kirk, because I was doing a session at the Alabama Broadcasters, it was part of my slide deck, but I hadn't really put it together like that. Until Kirk did a Facebook post with Jeff Welton says, keep it cool, keep it clean, keep it well grounded.
I'm glad it's I can help you with that. But I fully credit you, Jeff Welton, with originating that. I think I just maybe memorialized
it. I think you cleaned it up and made it a little tidier, which is probably a fair way of putting it.
Okay. So these relationships are important. And so many engineers, we're not necessarily good at relationships. Okay, I happen to come out of the factory a little bit more relationship oriented, but you hear the joke about, hey, your typical engineer looks at his own shoes, and if he's outgoing, he'll look at the other person's shoes, right? And we joke about that, but a lot of engineers, you know, we pick this profession because maybe we don't like dealing with people. We'd rather deal with things that we know we can control. We have better success with that in our lives. Now, honestly, most of the engineers that I know, really, really personable people. Here at the symposium, I mean, there were almost 60 engineers here, and you know, plenty of good times, handshakes, back slaps, good times, lots of smiles. But taking a few moments to make sure that you have a relationship with your factory rep, you know, whether it's Nautel or Gates Air, Elanos, or whoever it may be, or Wheatstone, Telos, Omnia, Axia, Orban, any of these companies, Angry Audio, Max Connect. And it doesn't hurt to go ahead and do a little pre-work. For example, let's just imagine that you as an engineer are thinking about talking to Max Connect. You might go ahead and just shoot off an email to Josh Bone there or to their info email and just say, hey, my name's Joe Blow. I'm from Kokomo. I've got 4 stations I take care of here. Just wanted to establish a relationship with you guys. It doesn't hurt to, you know, to get people to know who you are. So when they answer the phone, you can dispense with all that and move on to the business at hand. They already know that you're friendly. Is that a good idea, Jeff?
And that's really kind of the key thing. So David Bialik had a pretty cool article. I think it was in Radio World a week or two ago. It showed up in my newsfeed, and he was talking about vendor relationships and you know, getting a broadcast vendor that you liked and that you trusted to work with. And that way they could learn your stuff. And of course, they know a lot of the stuff in the industry, so they're able to help you out. It's like Wilson said, it's you don't need to know all the answers. You just need to know who might. And that's, I'd say, probably 3/4 of my job is reaching out to the people that do know the answers. It's like I start every one of my TTT sessions. It's like, you know, every time I reach out here, I try to find somebody smarter than me, which coincidentally isn't that hard to do. And for every topic out there, there's somebody that knows more about it, no matter what the topic is. So, yeah, find those people and make friends with them.
I am so glad you reminded me about that David Bialik article. We will definitely put that in the show notes as well, because I read that. That article, I think I got linked to it from LinkedIn. There was a posting there about it. And I even sent David Bialik a little note. I said, David, what a great article this is. The article is What You Don't Have a Broadcast Vendor. In other words, establish a relationship with a broadcast vendor. I mean, Broadcasters General Store, they sponsor this show. There you go. Thank you very much, Suncast. What? You don't have a broadcast vendor. And he says, don't overlook the importance of this resource in the industry, because the people who work at the broadcast vendors, no matter who it is, they know what people are buying. They hear the comments back from their customers. You know, hey, I really love this thing. It's got 1,001 uses. Or, well, I've got to buy another such and so because this one failed again. I wish they wouldn't fail. Mm-hmm. And they know this. It's a great reason to make sure you have a relationship with somebody at a vendor.
Right. Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to throw out there one way to get some of those relationships, like Kirk and I just saw each other at the Kansas Association of Broadcasters show a couple of weeks ago, and lots of engineers and folks around there. If there's a state association and they have a convention, and especially if they have an engineering track at that convention, we're going to be there. Jeff's going to be there. Kirk's going to be there. Come around, say hi if we don't know you. If we do, even better. But that's one way to get out and get to meet people. Next week, actually, I'll be in Alaska at the Alaska Association of Broadcasters show. So seeing a lot of good friends and hopefully making some new ones while I'm there.
Wait, Alaska in November? You lucky dog.
Yeah, they just got put a snow.
Breaking snow. Better him than me.
One thing that of course, you know, it seems like common sense. Well, yeah, I should know somebody at my vendor. But one thing that David points out, and I want to bring this up too, you shouldn't feel like you're alone on a project. No matter what kind of project you're doing, probably somebody else has already done it. And a good vendor will probably have talked to that other person, and they can hook you up with someone who's already done something similar to what you're doing. For example, I haven't had a big need yet to learn SNMP. I've poked at it a few times, but someday I'm going to jump in and hook up a bunch of stuff with SNMP at one of my transmitter sites. And I'll probably call Chris Tarr because I know him and I know he's done this. But if I didn't know Chris Tarr, I'd be on the phone with BGS and say, who do you know who's done some SNMP projects? And I'm sure that they could tell me. So, because that networking is really key and so helpful to all of us.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those, and again, you don't necessarily, like, I've had folks reach out to me on SNMP and I'll tell them flat out, I know enough to be dangerous, but I'll point them to Tony Peterly at Automat WorldCast because mm-hmm. he's taught courses on this stuff. You know, so yeah, absolutely. You sort of, you reach out to anybody you know, because even if they don't know the answer, they may know somebody who will, or that person may. Sometimes you end up two-stepping it to get there. But yeah, the running joke is there's 40 people in this industry and 39 jobs, so we just take turns figuring out who's going to be employed this month. But it all comes around, you know. I mean, I've known engineers when they were just a contract guy, and I've known the same engineers when they were director of engineering for big groups, and maybe back to contract guys later on in their career. So, you know, a lot of folks move around. So the joke I make, and, anybody who's a little too sensitive, plug your ears, but I say, this industry, you really need to be careful, because the ass you're kicking today may be the one you're kissing tomorrow.
That's so true. Oh my gosh. We need to memorialize that. And indeed. Hey, guys, you are listening or watching to This Week in Radio Tech with Jeff Wilson in the center of your screen, and Jeff Weldon was over there on the right. I'm Kirk Harnack. Today, I'm doing the show from, I really want to thank the folks at Nielsen. That's the folks who do ratings for television, radio. They also do a little bit of print and outdoors, and they operate the Grace Note service as well. So they do a lot of things. We're at their headquarters in Tampa, Florida, and it's a huge, beautiful building. They have a lot of their employees still working remote from home, but this is an absolutely beautiful facility. And the reason that we're here is because the Tampa, Florida SBE Chapter Number 39 put on a technology symposium today, and we had about 60 engineers plus some vendors in here and speakers. I was honored to speak. Thank you very much for inviting me, and we had a great day. They really did it right, and it's easy to see how Tampa's Chapter 39 is really growing. Okay, so thanks to Nielsen for letting me even stay late. I've got to get past security on the way out of the building here in a little bit. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store. And they are, well, they represent so many lines, but one of their manufacturers that they represent is Broadcast Tools. Broadcast Tools. I really appreciate, if you've probably used Broadcast Tools equipment, so have I, so many things that they make. And I know we've talked about it before, but I really want to point out the usefulness of the Audio Sentinel Plus Web RJ. That's a mouthful. It's a silent sensor that has some great features. It's really a next-generation web-enabled two-channel stereo silence and phase monitor with an integrated transparent 2x1 switcher. And by the way, phase monitoring, is that still important these days in this day of computer audio? I mean, shouldn't phase always be correct? You may think so. We just had a story today here at the symposium about a production director at a radio station in the area who was chopping up some songs and making promos out of them. And this production director was using some external processing on this and really messing up the phase. They thought it was a really cool effect, which made it unlistenable on mono radios, made it unlistenable on some stereo radios too. So the engineer got involved and said, hey, you got phase problems here. Let's fix this. Let's not use that plugin anymore. So the Broadcast Tools Audio Sentinel WebRJ looks for that and will warn you about it. It'll monitor two analog audio sources, one primary and a backup one. And if silence is detected on the primary input, it will automatically switch to the backup input with, get this, a mechanical latching relay. Now, not often do I get excited about something mechanical, but mechanical latching relays are the bomb when it comes to making sure something stays on the air, even through a power failure. So it has an HTML5-enabled web server, so you can even use it on mobile devices. It's powered by a single high-performance ARM Cortex processor, so you know it's got plenty of smart guts inside. Front panel, remote, and web-based switcher controls. It has email notification, which can be configured to alert up to 8 different recipients when alarms are detected. Lots and lots of features, as you can see. I couldn't possibly go through and read them all, including a surge-protected internal power supply. It's universal switching. You can also put two of them in one rack shelf, so you can monitor and switch a couple of different stations in just one RU. Check this thing out from Broadcast Tools, the Audio Sentinel Plus WebRJ Audio Silence Detector. And it is web-based, and it's really smartly built. It's available from Broadcaster's General Store. In fact, I just met with Jessica Schutt here today from BGS, and also Martin Reyes. By the way, if you're a Hispanic station, you need to give a call to Martin. He'll be glad to help you out in your comfortable Spanish language. Thanks a lot to Broadcaster General Store at bgs.cc for helping us out and sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right. We got more to talk about. Jeff, I'm not sure where you want to go. I want to make sure we cover the notion. We talked a bit about, you know, best practices, but I wonder if there's any more we could talk about with regard to taking care of something now at a lower cost is a whole lot smarter than it getting out of hand and becoming expensive. And I don't know if you have any more examples of that, but we hear that mantra, and yet so often we don't apply it. Like the plumber's got the worst plumbing in town, right? Or the electrician has the worst electric wiring in his house of anybody in town, because we think, well, we can fix that anytime. Well, you know what? Maybe now's the time.
Well, and that kind of is what happened. I'll give you an example. So in my infinite spare time, I help out with engineering duties at a radio station in the area. And coincidentally, we were talking relationships. So I'm going to segue for a bit, because if Suncell can pan over toward that towel on the wall behind me, you're going to see that I've been joined by somebody else. He may have to tuck in a little bit. But, Matt Herden has joined us, and Matt's listening on the phone, but we're kind of sharing a microphone. That way we're not messing up the audio too much for the broadcast. So Matt worked with Nautel for quite a few years, and he was instrumental in that new AUI we were talking about before. And so it's funny, because I finished that course and I texted Matt to say, hey, I just taught a course on your AUI, even though you don't work with us anymore. You hoser.
Hoser. So, anyway. Oh my gosh.
I had to use it at least once, but
that's the first time that's ever been used as an epithet on our show, I think.
That is a technical Canadian term. I can verify.
Sure enough.
And it's funny because we don't use it a lot, but yeah, there are a lot of things you can do, but what I was getting at with my station, I mean, it was just this year that we installed a surge protector on the station that I put on the air August, 2016. So, you know, fortunately in our part of the world, we don't get a lot of lightning, but I just got done talking about the need for surge protectors. And meanwhile, I've been kind of negligent. The grounding at my own house, I just dug it up 2 years ago and discovered that it was woefully inadequate. So that's been fixed since. So you're right. It's definitely the plumber's pipes get fixed last type situation. And it really, the challenge is that if you wait until there's a problem, you know, because like you say, there isn't always time. Sometimes you discover there's time when the red lights come on and the smoke comes out. And I can guarantee you it will be a lot more expensive then than it is now.
Yeah, indeed. Surge protectors, that's a really good topic, because that's something that if we have a site that doesn't have a good surge protector or any at all, and it works fine for a few years, we kind of forget about it. We think, well, but the time you need a surge protector is that, you know, 3 milliseconds when you need it, right? And you don't know when that's going to be. Doesn't have to be a lot of lightning. You know, it could be the farm down the road had a compressor spin out of control and put a surge down the, you know, back down the line, and it hits every farmhouse and your transmitter site, you know, down that circuit.
Replaced a non-Nautel transmitter in Lake of the Ozarks because the power company was trying to clear a stuck relay on their line. And apparently, and I did not know this, and I'm still not 100% sure it's accurate, but apparently they cleared the stuck switches by firing a pulse down the line, and they dropped the load off the line for whatever duration the pulse is, but whatever was supposed to drop the load malfunctioned as well, so they ended up firing several thousand volts down the line and frying a whole bunch of gear, including this transmitter. So, Yeah, I mean, a surge protector, something that clamps on an overvoltage, might have saved the day for those folks. Instead, they ended up buying. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm happy to sell new transmitters all day long, but I prefer to sell them when it's time for them to be replaced on a schedule, not because the front is melted.
Well, and to that point, since the beginning of the pandemic, you know, we just can't ship one overnight anymore. So it is good to plan ahead for your transmitter replacement needs.
Yeah. Now, the littler ones, we're getting back. We've been to shelf stock, and we're away from shelf stock again. And, I mean, as workload goes up and down, I can usually get one out the door in a week or so. But a week or so is a long time to be off the air. And so that comes back to the whole concept of backups and lightning protection and just being sure that that you're not left high and dry. And yeah, I mean, the pandemic was a great example because everybody was so busy configuring all the air staff to do 35 remotes a day working from home. And so the transmitter sites were getting neglected. And then last year, year before, were banner years for us as we replaced all the stuff that blew up because it had been getting neglected all through the pandemic.
Hey, let me ask you about something that I do see at transmitter sites. I see something very unfortunate at transmitter sites that have Nautel transmitters. And I know that now you're thinking, uh-oh, what's Kirk going to talk about? And I got to admit, probably one of my own transmitter sites, although I didn't put the transmitter in, there's a Nautel transmitter there, and it's got this problem as well. Ready to hear it? At Nautel-equipped transmitter site, there is a cardboard box often sitting on the floor where it was discarded or it was put there thinking, we'll get to that when we're done putting the transmitter in. And it's a rather heavy box. It's a rather heavy box, and typically it has a whole collection of ferrite cores in it. And interestingly, they don't have any wires going through them. They're in the box they came in. And I see this, Jeff, at too many transmitter sites. Why is that particularly egregious?
So the funny thing about ferrites, and ferrites on their own aren't going to do a whole lot. Ferrites in conjunction with good grounding and some surge protection properly installed can make a little bit of difference. If you get in that mother of all strikes where the lightning's going through all of your voltage dividers to ground and looking for ways out to the AC lines, and all of a sudden it gets down to this one junction, and the path we want it to go is there, and the path through the transmitter is there, and some voltages or currents going both ways. If I've got a ferrite on the line to the transmitter raising that impedance just that little bit more, then less current's going there. Maybe that's enough less in some cases. So again, on their own, they're not going to do a whole lot. I mean, I've seen ferrites explode in poorly grounded sites where they hit an overload of current, they saturated, and they exploded. And it's really fun to watch, but not so much if you're the guy standing there at the time. We provide them. So they're provided at no additional charge. It makes no sense not to install them. And I think we're pretty clear about where they should go in the install documents, although sometimes they're a little ambiguous because we try to leave the options open. So, yeah, absolutely. And this comes back to the have a relationship with your vendor. If you get a box and you're unpacking a transmitter and you're installing it and you actually watch the video that says how to unpack it and install it, and you still got a question, reach out to the guy that sold it to you or the folks in support and say, hey, this doesn't make sense to me. You know, I mean, more and more I've discovered as I get older that a lot more things don't make sense to me because there's a whole pile of stuff I don't know a lot about. You know, whether it's we've all discussed my opinion of certain brands of communications equipment. And a lot of times that opinion's not founded in any fault of the equipment. It's my lack of knowledge of it. So I've slowly, over a year and a half, been developing a little resource of folks I can go, hey, I'm dumb and I don't know how to make this work. And
did you RTFM?
Yeah, it saved a little bit of growling and cussing at the IT folks who saddled me with this thing. Matt's
so I want to
because Matt is an iPhone guy and he's been here. Oh no, not an iPhone anymore.
Never been one.
Oh, well, there you go. Matt, never mind. There was a reason I liked them.
Let me follow up a bit more on the toroid question. It's my understanding that if you have a smaller cable, like maybe a little BNC to BNC coax cable, bringing your multiplex into the transmitter, it's okay to wrap that cable a couple times through an appropriately sized toroid. Yeah,
it's actually preferred. Yeah, I mean when the cable goes through, and remember that we're using them as common mode protection, so I need the feed and the return going through the toroid. And if I've got feed and return going through the toroid, just as that cable's passing through the toroid, that counts as a one-turn inductor. If I make a loop and run it through again, now it's a two-turn inductor. So and this is linear math. It's double the inductance. So, there is going to be a point of diminishing returns, but the more turns typically you can get on there, the better off you are.
So that... how can you install a toroid that's the wrong way to install it? And I'm thinking maybe you've got a single phase AC going in. You wouldn't put a toroid around each of the phases, right? That's not common mode, right?
Normally you would not. No. Now, the only time you would do that, and whether it's single phase or three phase, you'd put a toroid over each line if the power supply was floating, so it didn't have a ground reference.
Oh,
and our Q series transmitters were like that. So on those ones, I would put a toroid on each line. I mean, you could put all the toroids on the one line, and it'll help some, but not quite as much. That would be about the only exception to that. So yeah, if you put like a single wire, one place where you could install it wrong, I've watched somebody put ground wire through the toroid and wrap it around a bunch of times. So they made the path we want the lightning to go.
Oh no! Okay, wow, that's an obvious. Yeah, wow, wow, yeah.
Well,
don't run your ground through the toroid. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
So, goodness. But by the same token, there are a lot of installs I've been to where the ground wire is run through a ferrite or through a conduit, steel conduit. Same thing.
That's right, a conduit. Yeah, so don't conduit your ground wires.
So, you know, and now there are going to be areas, there are some high rises where exposed wiring is required by the code, the building code, to be in an enclosure, in a conduit.
Yeah.
You can get non-ferrous conduit. There's PVC conduit out there. If you can't do that, you can get conduit nipples that will actually attach to the wire itself and make the conduit part of the ground wire. So that's another option.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I'll have to look up a source for those someday because I've heard people telling me about them and I've never actually looked to find one. So, you know, if I lied to you on that, I'll apologize in advance, but I'll see if I can find a reference and send it to you.
A clamping conduit nipple. You heard it here first, folks. All right.
Sounds almost wrong.
I know. It sounds very wrong. That's why I said it.
Kurt, got to do this for you. One's totally non-transmitter or anything related. When does it joke become a dad joke?
I don't know. When does a joke become a dad joke?
When it becomes apparent. Thank you, son.
All right. Jeff, is the state of Louisiana in your territory, Jeff?
Well, it is. For those who don't know, Ted Nahill retired the end of October after Ted was with us for 5 years. And I mean, Ted and I, back in our smoking days, because we both quit smoking a couple of months apart, but back in our smoking days, we were smoking buddies for probably 10, 15 years before that at various trade shows when he was working with the Gates Air and Interplex. So at the moment, our territories are a little in flux, but right now, for this exact moment, I can say that Louisiana is in my territory.
So here's the question then. What's the loneliest place in Louisiana?
Oh, I don't know. What is the loneliest place in Louisiana?
That would be by you self.
Okay. Wilson's just sitting in the middle on the screen going, I can't compete with this.
Don't forget to tip your waitresses, folks. They're going to be here all night.
All right. So we talked about the thing that I see that is so cheap because the parts are already there, and that is the toroids. Put them to use. As Jeff said, they aren't the be-all, end-all, but they're there. Use them. And Jeff, I suppose if you've got remote control wiring coming into your transmitter or Ethernet, those should also go common mode. That is, the whole cable should go through the toroid as well. Yeah.
Essentially, any cable that has a feed and a return. So, yeah, remote control wiring, STL antenna cable, coax. A lot of times you'll hear about Marty's getting blown up. And, ground the coax shield when it comes into the building, and then between that point and the STL receiver, throw a toroid on the cable. So, again, cheap insurance.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, guys, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, Jeff and Jeff are going to have tips of the week for us. Maybe they don't know it yet, but now they do. They have homework over and they got 2 minutes to get it done. So here we go. Our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by something that we talked about just today here at the Technology Symposium, and that is virtualization via containerization, containerized software. I just installed some containerized software in Oxford, Mississippi at my FM station there with HD 1, 2, and 3. It's sitting right next to the Nautel Multicast Plus box, which is sitting right next to the transmitter and the HD Exciter. But I've got a server there. But you know what? Not everybody is comfortable. And hey, frankly, I could have gone this route too. Not everybody's comfortable in getting this containerized software installed because there's a lot to it on your own server platform. Maybe you'd rather just buy a solution that's already put together for you. Well, Broadcast Bionics, a longtime sponsor of this show and really forward-thinking broadcast manufacturer, Broadcast Bionics has the virtual rack. I think Suncast probably, there we go. If broadcast hardware isn't hard, you can rapidly deploy containerized broadcast products from Telos Alliance, from Sound4, and from 2WCOM. Those are the ones available now. And as more manufacturers make products available that actually run virtually in containerized software, those can be added to Virtual Rack from BroadcastBotics. Now, what is it? When you purchase Virtual Rack, you get to choose a couple different sizes of Virtual Rack. When you plug it in and turn it on, you get a screen like what's shown here. You get actually a list of different broadcast functions that you can install and turn on. It's kind of like an app store for containerized broadcast products. So if you want an Axia Altus mixing console, you click on that. Within usually about a minute, it will download and install. And not only install, it will set up the proper networking functionalities inside the Docker system there and inside your Linux operating system. You can download, for example, now you can download Omnia Forza, which is an audio processor for streaming or HD radio or DAB. You can download and install literally with a click a Telos VX phone system. Now, those products, they're downloaded, they're installed, but they're not licensed yet. So now you need to contact the respective manufacturers of those things, whether it's Omnia, Axia, Telos Alliance, or whether it's 2WCOM or Sound4, and get your license for that product and get it licensed, and that will turn it on and make it work. Now you've got an audio console or a broadcast phone system or a broadcast style audio processor or some codecs. There's all different kinds of things that you can do right now. If you want to learn more about this technology, and it is so cool that you can literally buy a product, and this is an off-the-shelf server. So, it was chosen to be work well for this. And whether it's a smaller one or the bigger one, it'll tell you how many, I think they call them application units, how many application units that it will handle. So, you can't over-install stuff. It won't let you do that. It won't let you overtax processor. There's a couple of videos on this web page from Broadcast Bionics. If you Google Broadcast Bionics Virtual Rack, I'm sure it'll take you right there. We have a link in the show notes for this. This is some cool technology, and I got to demonstrate this technology here today at this Broadcast Technical Symposium, and I'm telling you, it works. We're doing our morning show every single day at WBZK The Buzz in Oxford, Mississippi. And we're doing it with containerized audio console and containerized phone system, taking phone calls, making radio every morning on the morning show. And you can do it yourself easily with Virtual Rack. Thanks a lot to Broadcast Bionics, and especially Dan McQuillan for having this incredible vision for products like Virtual Rack. Appreciate it very much, your sponsorship of this week in Radio Tech. Oh, the website, bionic.radio. Or Bionics, with an S, bionics.co.uk. Again, links are in the show notes. All right, about to wrap up this show with a couple of Jeffs. Jeff Squared, Jeff Times Two, Jeff Wilson, Jeff Welton. Who wants to go first with a tip of the week?
I'll throw one out here. My tip of the week is if you're going to be, if you're invited out to dinner, you should probably ask beforehand, am I going to be roped into a webinar and have to come out here and take care of you guys and take care of Mr. Welton? But no, happy to be here. It's been a lot of fun. It's not a very good tip, but yeah, when you're
visiting, that's Jeff, assume you're going to end up on camera.
Yes, there you go. That's a long way to say that.
Well, Jeff, thank you for joining us. I hope it wasn't too painful for you.
No, not at all. It's been
good. And good to see your face. I haven't seen you since Kansas, right?
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Welton, what tip of the week would you like to leave?
So for me, it's sort of a combination of things that we brought up today, but take every facility in your care, or if you're a contract engineer, everyone you've got on retainer, and try to take the time to do a walkthrough with a notepad as if you're not you, as if you're somebody looking at buying the place. Mm-hmm. And just take notes on the things that you think probably should be addressed. Beyond that, you really need to have, and because you're going to be talking to the owner, so we're going to be interested in the dollars and cents, not the volts and the watts. So you need to have an idea what that station bills so you can estimate a value of off-air time and figure out both what kind of off-air time you might need to rectify these situations or what kind of off-air time are you risking if they're not rectified. And I mean, yeah. At that point, you've got an argument that the managers can understand. They may still shoot you down, but at least you can make an argument on their level.
Yeah, well, that's a great point, is put a value on being off the air. And when you think about that, not just the value of the commercials that you may miss or the fundraising opportunity if you're a public station that you may miss, but what about your lost listeners that you may never get back or may come back slowly over time? When you get back on the air, the value of what you're offering is going to be less than what it was before you went off the air.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you got to look at what the station bills. You eliminate that for whatever period of time, and then it comes back on a logarithmic curve. It doesn't come back all at once or even linearly.
You know, a great example of this, and I'll give my tip of the week, just to not the specific solution. I've talked about that before. A community radio station, a very good one, wins all kinds of awards in Memphis, Tennessee, WEVL. They lost their double hop STL. They lost the hop point. The bank remodeled and didn't give them any place to hop with. So they went on a major cable internet provider, and we put in an IP-based MPX system to get their signal from downtown Memphis out the burbs where the transmitter is. Well, a bad storm came through Memphis, and it took them off the air. They have business class service. They pay hundreds of dollars a month for internet service at the transmitter site. They were off for 4 days, and they were off for 4 days during fundraising. It was terrible. And there wasn't, I live a 4-hour drive away. There wasn't really anything I could do. So when they got back on the air, what we did was we had been trying some of these T-Mobile 5G gateway products at a couple of our sites. And I've been mostly happy. We had trouble with one, but I've been mostly happy. So the price was right. It was $50 a month and unlimited and good speed. And so, and by the way, they could have used Max Connect. That would have been another alternative. So we got them a device, and just in time, we installed it that night. Their cable internet went out again, hours at a time. And they stayed on the air thanks to a backup system. So, you know, what was lost airtime worth? A lot. And so they decided to spend the money on having me come and put it in and pay the monthly fee for it. So, yeah, take care of problems before they happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I just realized I yammered on for a while. I always like to tell that story because it's such a valuable story, and for honestly for $53 a month they have backup,
makes a huge difference, you know. And a backup's only as good as the last time you saw it running.
Yeah, well, that's mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much. Jeff Wilson, Jeff Welton, good to see you both. And either of you going to be in Washington D.C. for the IEEE? No,
I don't know. When is it this year?
Not, no.
It's next week. That's something that Paul Schulens puts together.
Probably not this year, but you may see us. And I'm not sure. I don't think Philip's going this year, but usually we've got somebody there. So I'll pay attention and see if I can find out.
And then I'll be out at Wabi in Vancouver in a couple of weeks.
You'll see our Canadian guy, Gary Mantufel, will be out there. Yep.
Oh, Gary Mantufel. Yep. Okay. Awesome. Yep. Well, good. I'll look forward to it. All right. You guys take care. We'll see you next week. And also, big thanks to Suncast for working on producing our show. Really appreciate you, buddy. And we'll see you next week.
He's got to put up with the two Jeffs, too. So, you know, huge shout out for the patience level there.
We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.